the Orb, Volume 1, Number 11, Gender. Hello, welcome to the Orb. My name is Reed Hart. Coming out of the episode on labels, I'm led to another element of our language that forms one of the most fundamental aspects of who we are as individuals and cultures. When a child is born, what is the first thing said or asked?
It's a boy!
It's a girl!
Congratulations, Reg. It's a squid.
I've spent some time considering why this is the first thing we seek to know about a person. Knowing the gender of a baby does not change my interaction with the infant, so why do I need to know? The first answer that comes to mind is language. I admit I don't know much about the wide range of languages on the planet, but certainly English, and I expect the majority of languages, have a history of being gendered. Pronouns for people are he, she, her, him. These are required elements in modern English. To talk about the new baby, I need to know which pronoun to use. The second reason is that to imagine the child's future, I have to cast that person into a gender role. In the natural world, the world of birds in particular, the role of the female is to birth and nurture the next generation. Female birds tend to appear invisible, camouflaged with dirt-colored speckles and the components of background. The males are colorful, with long feathers useful only for show. When you attract attention, you become expendable. You don't have a uterus. You don't have eggs to warm or mouths to feed. Being at the top of the food chain, humans, at least in the industrialized non-Islamic world, have abandoned this strategy and reversed the roles. Women are colorful and draw attention to themselves. Men wear the drab colors. This has resulted in increasingly undesirable behaviors, skewing the value of women toward body image and sexualized appearance. This is particularly disturbing when these values are adopted by prepubescent girls. Lisa Bloom, a particularly aware author, wrote of an encounter with a 5-year-old girl at a friend's dinner party. Quote, "Little Maya was all curly brown hair, doe-like dark eyes, and adorable in her shiny pink nightgown. I wanted to squeal, 'Maya, you're so cute, look at you! Turn around and model that pretty ruffled gown, you gorgeous thing!' But I didn't. I squelched myself, restraining myself from my first impulse, which is to tell them how darn cute, pretty, beautiful, well-dressed they are. What's wrong with that? It's our culture standard talking to little girls icebreaker, isn't it? And why not give them a sincere compliment to boost their self-esteem? In America, nearly half of all 3 to 6-year-old girls worry about being fat. 15 to 18% of girls under 12 now wear mascara, eyeliner, and lipstick regularly. Eating disorders are up and self-esteem is down. And 25% of young American women would rather win America's Next Top Model than the Nobel Peace Prize. Even bright, successful college women say they'd rather be hot than smart. That's why I forced myself to talk to little girls as follows. Maya, I said, crouching down at her level, looking into her eyes, very nice to meet you. Nice to meet you too, she said in that trained, polite, talking to adults good girl voice. Hey, what are you reading? I asked. Her eyes got bigger, and the practiced, polite facial expression gave way to genuine excitement over this topic. What's your favorite book? I asked. I'll go get it. Can I read it to you? Purplicious was Maya's pick, about a heroine who loves pink, but is tormented by a group of girls at school who only wear black. Alas, it was about girls and what they wore, and how their wardrobe choices defined their identities. But after Maya closed the final page, I steered the conversation to the deeper issues in the book. Mean girls and peer pressure and not going along with the group. Not once did we discuss clothes, or hair, or bodies, or who was pretty. It's surprising how hard it is to stay away from these topics with little girls. But I'm stubborn. One tiny bit of opposition to a culture that sends all the wrong messages to our girls. One tiny nudge towards valuing female brains. One brief moment of intentional role modeling. Unquote. There is no reason to treat young boys differentially either. It doesn't have to be about strength, athletics, or career ambitions for them. Just treat kids like individual, fully capable, and full of potential people. Paraphrasing Bloom and removing the gender specifics, try this the next time you meet a child. They may be surprised and unsure at first because few ask about their mind, but be patient and stick with it. Ask what they're reading. What do they like and dislike and why? There are no wrong answers. You're just generating an intelligent conversation that respects their brain. For older kids, ask about current events, pollution, wars, school budgets being slashed. What bothers them out there in the world? How would they fix it if they had a magic wand? You may get some intriguing answers. Tell them about your ideas and accomplishments and your favorite books. Model for them what a thinking person says and does. There is a curious chicken and egg question here. Does the role come from gender, or do gender roles come from social structures? Did our gender determine how we structure our roles in society, or did the social division of labor define the roles for each gender?
Well, she's got jet pilot eyes from her hips on down. All the bombardiers are trying to force her out of town. She's 5'9" and she carries a monkey wrench. She weighs more by the foot than she does by the inch. She got all the downtown boys all at her command. But you got to watch her closely, 'cause she ain't no woman, she's a man.
Men generally have more upper body strength suited to particular roles in hunting, construction, and warfare. Women bear and nurture children, and as Alice Cooper sang, only women bleed. Physical differences have developed into social and cultural differentiation. Over time, societies developed a value scale on various activities, and this has created a hierarchy of roles that has trended toward a male-advantaged gender hierarchy. In the past 50 years, in the industrialized Western world, this value structure has been challenged. When might made right, men's strength advantage gave them the power and control over resources and decision-making. As we have come to value justice, intelligence, wisdom, and compassion, power is shifting privilege away from males to a neutral ground. Traditions, however, are deeply rooted and slow to catch up. As social creatures, we want to belong. We want the approval of our fellow citizens. We are reluctant to rock the boat. Changing gender roles and accepting others in alternate roles does not come easily. Until there is a critical mass of acceptance, struggle, frustration, and violence ensue. A clash of this nature is revealed in the story of Brandon Tina. I'll recognize the chosen gender identity of the individual at the center of the story and use the masculine form. You may know this story from the 1999 Academy Award-winning film Boys Don't Cry. Born in December 1972, sex assigned as female and named Tina Brandon, he began identifying as male during adolescence and dated a female student during this period. In 1993, at age 21, he moved from Lincoln, Nebraska to Falls City, where he fully adopted a male gender identity. On December 19, 1993, he was arrested for forging checks. This resulted in his being outed in the community as anatomically female. The community responded harshly to this revelation, although his girlfriend continued to stand by his chosen gender role. The men he had befriended, on the other hand, took the revelation about as badly as could be imagined. Brandon was raped by his former friends on December 24th. By December 31st, when it appeared charges were likely, they then murdered Brandon and two other innocent people present in the house at the time. This case continues to reveal social divisions on gender identity. Brandon's own mother continues to object to references to her child as he and Brandon. To try to organize the language a little, let's say sex is determined by the genitalia, with some slack cut for intersex individuals. Sexual orientation is where your heart takes you. This has nothing to do with being male or female. Gender is how you identify yourself and the role you play in the world. Expression is a combination of the whole. If any one of the first three don't agree with the others, this is where variation from the social and cultural norm sets in. Although there are notable exceptions, we have largely structured our society, like our language, on a binary selection, male and female. We assume a person's physical, mental, and sexual aspects all match up. In fact, they don't have to. It's not unnatural to have any number of variances. There are physical anomalies. As the fetal cells divide and take up specific functions within the human organism, the genitals start out the same. The presence of the SRY gene determines whether fetal gonads continue as ovaries or convert to testes. These in turn produce the hormones necessary to shape the outer genitalia. This process does not always deliver a baby that has reached the end of that path. The genitals may have completed only part of the trip. In these intersex cases, the gender of the child may be arbitrarily decided by doctors or parents. We take a best guess approach, disappearing the intersexed right away with corrective surgery. Those advocating for surgery to correct the identity claim it as a necessity for the person to function in society. Many intersex individuals have resented the medical intervention, and some have been so discontented as to opt for sexual reassignment surgery later in life. In addition to the physical anomalies, there are psychological ones. Transgendered people are those who identify with a gender that is in conflict with their physiology. Societies assign roles and separate people by sex, assuming this matches their gender. Publicly, we separate washroom facilities, something I've never seen anyone do in their homes. We separate by gender in prisons, and although not nearly so widely now, some still separate by gender in schools. These separations appear to be done for two main reasons: safety and order. Men tend to be physically more powerful. In some settings, this creates a threat to women's safety. Men are also more easily distracted. This creates a threat to order and discipline. Culture is working on this problem as we try to get men to keep it in their pants. We've integrated schools in most parts of the world, hoping that if people grow up together, they will respect one another. In the past half century, there has been some integration in the military, where discipline is an imperative. Society's primary focus has settled on the risk of sexual interaction, and in particular unwanted interaction, that may be demeaning or humiliating. Where security screening requires physical contact, we try to have same-gendered interaction to reduce the risk of unwanted sexuality. This can lead to challenges where one's gender identity, physiology, or sexuality don't coincide. Should gay men be placed with straight men in prison or separated? Passports used to require you to declare your gender as male or female. Now, any country that complies with the International Civil Aviation Organization's specifications for machine-readable passports can choose to introduce a gender X. Use is limited to intersexed individuals who are biologically not entirely male or female. Transgender people, whose gender identity differs from their biology, will be able to pick whether they are male or female if their choice is supported by a doctor's statement. Transgender people cannot pick X. This is intended to assist people who would otherwise be detained because their gender in their passport doesn't reflect what they look like. Some countries, such as the US, have changed the declaration for parents from father and mother to parent one and parent two, allowing for same-gender households to co-parent children. Thai campaigners successfully petitioned courts to allow transgender people to serve in the military after previously being turned away on the grounds that they were suffering from permanent psychoses. Kathy Witterick and David Stoker have three children. The oldest, age 5, is named Jazz. The youngest, born in January 2011, is aptly named Storm. Kathy wrote, quote, "When Storm was near arrival, Jazz wondered if people would respond differently if they didn't know the baby's sex. What gifts would they bring? If Storm was a boy, would he be allowed to wear dresses? Pink. There are these moments as a parent when you wish your child could bring a different issue to the table, but there it is, plop. And if you really mean what you say about being kind, honoring difference, having an open mind, and placing limits thoughtfully where they help children develop competencies and be safe, then you better walk the talk. We agreed to keep the sex of our new baby private." Having spent many years facilitating on the topic of abuse and violence prevention, particularly as it pertains to children, I would never tell my children or anyone to keep a secret. Secrets are not safe and healthy. I, like many parents, have taught my children that some things are private matters, and when you want to share them, you need to do so honestly, with sensitivity and consideration. If I had to convince my children not to share Storm's sex, which I don't because my children simply are not interested at this point, I would teach them that someone else's genitals and sense of how they relate to their gender is their private business, to be shared by them or in a context where safety, acceptance, and sensitivity are paramount. None of my children are gender-free or genderless, and neither am I. It is true that my oldest son, Jazz, does not have a traditional notion of what boys should wear, look like, or do. It is also true that we believe our children should have the right to choose their clothes and hairstyle. Jazz has a strong sense of being a boy, and he understands that his choices to wear pink and have long hair are not always acceptable to his community. He chooses freely to do them anyway, because he also has been taught to respect difference, love himself, and navigate the world in a way that is true to his own voice. Storm has a sex, which those closest to him, her, know and acknowledge. We don't know yet about color preference or dress inclinations, but the idea that the whole world must know our baby's sex strikes me as unhealthy, unsafe, and voyeuristic. Storm is my third child, and this is what I know. Someday soon, Storm will have something to say about it. So in the meantime, I'm just listening carefully. Unquote. We have not yet reached a critical mass in society for accepting that gender roles do not have to be assigned at birth. In response to Storm's story, Wayne Leung wrote, quote, "The world around us has been set by thousands of years of social evolution. To try to undo this evolution through your child is very selfish and very inconsiderate to the child," unquote. Heather Riel wrote, "These parents are turning their children into a bizarre lab experiment." Psychologist Diane Ehrensaft said, "For most people, gender is bedrock. When two parents challenge that bedrock, as Storm's parents have, it makes everyone anxious. When we are anxious, we strike out. It's as if the world has started spinning and we're trying to get our bearings." Kathy Witterick responded to the outcry saying, quote, "Isn't defensiveness sometimes a first sign of learning or changing behavior? So even the rabid responses may have a place in making the world a more thoughtful place," unquote. There is a disagreement among the experts as to the source of gender identity. Some advocate that it is biological, citing the case of David Reamer, born a boy but surgically adjusted to and raised as a female named Brenda, following a botched circumcision. Reamer revealed later that he never felt like a girl and ultimately committed suicide in 2004. Others argue that cultural influences are strong enough to shape gender identity well before a child expresses language. There is concern that Storm will view the gender-neutral approach as a signal that gender is something shameful, resulting in damaging confusion. Said Mrs. Witterick, "We are all mocked for our appearance at some point. When faced with inevitable judgment by others, which child stands tall and sticks up for others? The one facing teasing despite desperately trying to fit in, or the one with a strong sense of self and supportive adults who love them unconditionally?" People have become upset that they can't categorize Storm into one of the two available boxes, male or female. Very few are asking why there aren't more boxes, or why there are boxes at all. Thank you. Orb is a listener-supported presentation of Cornoble Productions. New podcasts are released alternate Mondays at orbcast.ca or pick us up at iTunes. I'm Reed Hart.